We here in Iowa are some of the top food producers in the nation. Yet some of us, some Iowans, still have trouble accessing healthy foods. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This hour, we talk with experts across the state about people who live in areas with low access to healthy food, areas often referred to as food deserts. We'll find out why people in these areas have trouble accessing healthy food and what efforts are being done to help these residents. Is access to healthy food a problem where you live? Do you have to drive miles to buy fresh produce? Join our discussion as we explore food deserts after this news. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Iowa, as we most of us know, is one of the top food producers in the nation. Yet some of us Iowans still have trouble accessing healthy foods. This hour, we want to talk about that with a variety of experts across the state. We want to talk about people, maybe you're one of them, who live in areas with low access to healthy food, areas often referred to as food deserts. We want to understand why people in these areas have trouble accessing healthy food and what efforts are being done to help these residents. Perhaps you can help us explore food deserts this hour, particularly if you live in one. Is access to healthy food a problem where you live? Perhaps that neighborhood grocery store disappeared some years ago, and since then you've been left to travel miles to get fresh produce. Tell us about your experience. 1-866-780-9100. rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org is our email. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or get in touch with us on Facebook as well. Once again, that toll-free number to tell us if you live in a so-called food desert in Iowa. And yes, right in Iowa, they do exist as well. 1-866-780-9100. Joining us this hour, Doris Montgomery is with us, a registered dietitian and community health consultant for the Iowa Department of Public Health and a board member for the Food Bank of Iowa. Joining us in the meantime by phone, we'll eventually have you in the studio, I believe, Doris, but welcome to our program.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Helen Jensen is with us, a professor of economics at Iowa State University and head of CARD's Food and Nutrition Policy Division, CARD standing for the Center for Agricultural and Rural Development. Professor Jensen, welcome to our program.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
And Linda Gobberdeal, president of Food and You, LLC, and former president of Iowa Food Systems Council, also in Des Moines, joining us by phone in the meantime. Linda, welcome to you.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
I wonder if I can start with you, Helen Jensen, in our studio in Ames. I see the USDA estimates that some 13.5 million Americans live in these so-called food deserts. Tell us a little bit more about what they are and how they came to be.
Well, food, there are many different kinds of food deserts. The focus has been on looking at what types of food are available, distance to store, and to some extent, prices might enter that mix. These are viewed as primarily low-income areas, so a preponderance of low-income households living in food desert. So it's access, availability, distance to store, those components.
Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at the USDA's website here. They have something called the Food Desert Locator. It's quite a neat online tool, very similar to something like Google Maps something like that, where you can see the entire nation and then blocks of pink on my screen that are these food deserts. In Iowa, I don't know if you have the picture of Iowa in your head enough, Helen Jensen, to tell us where some of the major areas are in Iowa where we have food deserts.
Well, I don't have all the map available, but I do know that there are food deserts identified within the Des Moines area. An area where we have historically had some larger food stores, but they have moved out. And that would be a good example of an urban food desert.
Mm-hmm.
There are also rural food deserts where people may have to drive more than, I think it's a mile or mile and a half, to a store to obtain food, and there's a low density of those grocery stores.
I see. When I'm looking at the map, I see a lot of the counties on Iowa's border with Missouri having food deserts. Also in western Iowa, a good number of those. And then all across the state, the major metropolitan areas all seem to have some degree of food deserts within them. Can you, from an economist's perspective, tell us how these areas developed a little bit? Was this sort of the disappearance of the neighborhood grocery store, an extension of that?
Well, that's a good question. Why do these areas exist? Part of it has to do with just the demographic changes that we have, people moving out of rural areas, so there are fewer people in rural areas. That might be the demand side. When you don't have as many people, you don't have as much income, people buying foods. So it's not as profitable to locate in those areas. On the other hand, the way that we shop has changed. If you look at number of grocery trips, it used to be you'd go once a week.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're often going more often. Or when we do go, we go to supermarkets and buy large quantities.
Right.
Buying large quantities is fine if you have your car. But buying large quantities and pulling home a couple of large grocery baskets on a bus is much more difficult. So we find the type of shopping we do, lots of different changes. The way that stores buy food in large quantities, bulk purchases, all affects the prices and the availability and the location of those supermarkets.
Linda Gabardiel, let me go to you and have you describe the sort of diet. It's not that food is not available in these areas, is it? We're talking about healthy food, right, Linda?
Well, we're actually talking about both. Actually, in food deserts, it's places where there's few or no retail at all, and not necessarily even considering whether it's healthy food or not. So, yes, I mean, in some cases, there may be a convenience-type store or a gas station that has some food, and that may be the only source of food within miles, you know, depending on the area, whether it's in a rural setting or even within the Des Moines area. So It can be both. It can be any type of food or, of course, if there's a lack of food, generally it's maybe not as healthy either, fresh type food. So
has it developed in such a way with the mega stores, with fresh produce and so forth around, that in some cases you have food prices going down because of these bulk quantities for people who can afford to drive to them, Linda?
Right. I mean, if they're able to drive and as Helen mentioned, you know, have the transportation to carry large quantities, they can certainly save money. Those stores are typically called mega stores, and they do have lower prices because they can buy in very large quantities, where if they're not located near a store like that and they do have to go to more of a corner-type store, the volume that those stores are able to buy, they're naturally paying a higher price for. So.
Mm-hmm. 1-866-780-9100. Join our conversation, especially if you live in one of these so-called food deserts. I believe Ryan in Waterloo, who's joining us now, is in such an area. Hi, Ryan. Thank you for calling.
Thanks for having me.
Describe where you have to go to get food and what we would call healthy food.
Well, I live in Waterloo. We have about 60,000 to 70,000 citizens, and we've split down the middle. We have one grocery store, which is Hy-Vee, but we also have multiple liquor stores that sell junk food. Me and my family, we tend to buy bulk of our food at Hy-Vee, but then to, like, offset, we actually started our own garden.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully next year we'll be sustainable enough where we don't have to actually buy our vegetables and our produce from a grocery store. So that, and we also try to support the local Hy-Vee on our side of town to show that we want more businesses like Hy-Vee and other grocery stores to come over there. So.
Ryan, is the Hy-Vee close enough that you can walk to it even in cold weather?
No, it's about maybe 10 minute 10-minute drive from where I live. A Walmart is about a half-hour round trip for us if we want to go to Walmart or something like that.
Mm-hmm. So this is, this is making you go back a few generations to depend on your own property for produce.
Yes, and I mean, in the long run, we save money as well. So.
Right. And that's a good trend, something good we can find in here, too. Ryan, how do you hope the area will change? You alluded to it here. What would be a better direction?
Well, if people start utilizing just the Hy-Vee on our side of town, hopefully those other stores across town take notice and they'll want to develop on our side of town and, you know, show that they're willing to keep our business by developing on our side of town. That's the hope.
Ryan, thank you for joining us and telling us about the situation there in Waterloo. Thank you.
You have a great day.
You too. Ryan in Waterloo dialed 1-866-780-9100 talking about food deserts. If you have problems accessing food in your community, this can be in a rural or an urban setting. Helen Jensen, there we had the urban side of it. Tell us how it exists in a rural setting.
Well, certainly rural areas present a slightly different type of problem where transportation is a major challenge to the types of services offered to rural residents. Many rural residents are used to driving long distances, but the driving and access to transportation is important. If you don't have a working car, you're quite limited on your options and ability to shop wisely and obtain a variety of foods.
Doris Montgomery, let me get to you. You're a community health consultant for the Iowa Department of Public Health. We just heard from Ryan there in Waterloo what sounds like an urban food desert. Does that sound like a familiar story that you hear a lot about?
It does, and I think he addressed it very well in the sense that any solution to what other health challenge we have before us often can be linked to access to healthy food and physical activity and enough food. And how we get there really needs to be a multi-prong approach. I think I said to one of your colleagues that it really is like a all-hands-on-deck kind of approach. We have to look at this comprehensively and really understand the lives of the people that we're trying to serve. What is the context and the complexity of their lives?
We have food deserts at a time when we're also talking about an epidemic in obesity, especially among children, especially in children in low-income areas. Doris Montgomery, how do those two things fit together?
Well, we call it sometimes a paradox that we don't understand where there may be food insecurity or hunger, why there may be higher rates of obesity and chronic disease. For some people, that doesn't seem to connect. But actually, there's lots of reasons that could result in that kind of a situation. And there is a heavier burden among families and individuals who live on lower incomes in terms of health problems and in terms of obesity. So we are looking for, like I said, solutions, but it has been very challenging to really understand it. Again, trying to look through that lens of poverty and figuring out what would really work to improve the lives of these, very large segment of our population, actually, in Iowa. So whether that's kids, their families, their caregivers, and their grandparents, we really have concerns across the generation spectrum. But in particular, childhood obesity is really on one of the everybody's list of health concerns.
Professor Helen Jensen, perhaps you can speak to that as a professor of economics at Iowa State University. Are there still a lot of questions that are unanswered that we need to answer in order to get better remedies here?
Well, of course, Doris mentions very well that it's a complexity and it relates to a whole system of factors, a food system that involves the availability of stores, but also the opportunities to access those stores. A lot of the studies on food deserts look at whether or not the foods are available, whether fresh fruit and vegetables are available. Mm-hmm. But it's much harder to find out about prices. And we find that the shopping patterns and transportation respond to both. So it's not only getting food, but if you want to save money, often it does require driving larger distances or aggregating shopping so you're buying a lot of at one time when you make that trip to Walmart.
Do you see a solution here, Helen Jensen, that takes into account supply and demand factors so that we don't need, on a long-term basis, government assistance to these areas so that a grocer can find it worthwhile to be in these areas?
Well, I think that it is a complex problem. Some of the larger food chains have identified the smaller format as being an opportunity for growth. This may not be the case in Iowa with the Des Moines market, but in areas like Chicago or New York, where you have more of the workforce in downtown locations, they've been opening smaller footprint stores, but making those food opportunities available in the downtown location. And I think that might be something that we should look at in the state of Iowa for opportunities to encourage location of food stores in closer to downtown areas.
And you're speaking of the Des Moines metro area, according to the Des Moines Register in a recent article, the area with 687,000 residents, more than 60 full-service grocery stores, roughly 60% of those are in the suburbs, according to that article. So they're pointing to the need of grocery stores in specifically in Des Moines in the Near East and Southeast sides. Let's go to a caller from Cedar Rapids. Sandhya is with us in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Sandhya. Sandhya, are you there? Okay. Sandhya, one last chance. Not there. Let's go to Keon. Keon, if I correctly pronounced your name, where are you calling from?
Hi, I'm also calling from Waterloo. I live in Waterloo, and I like to eat organic food, and I have to usually travel to get fresh organic food, and a lot of the foods that grocery stores don't offer, like figs and oats and, you know, granola, I have to travel down to Iowa City to the Pioneer Market. Then, like, I drive trucks, and my route is here is in Iowa, and what really threw me off my rocker, you figure, living in rural Iowa, nothing but farms. But I found in Iowa, just to get food when I want lunch, a lot of these towns don't even have a gas station nor a store. And I'm usually 30 miles to 60 miles away from a town that has a store.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of these farmers out here in rural Iowa have to travel maybe at most 120 miles or so round trip just to get food.
Keon, yeah, I understand the situation. That is a problem. Who can comment on that among our group? This we mentioned it at the outset, and Keon mentions it as a big problem in his life. Iowa, a great food producer, and certainly a lot of organic produce, but many Iowans not able to access that.
Well, this
yes.
is
go
ahead. Go ahead,
Linda.
Oh, okay,
Linda Gobberdeal. Yes,
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Yes. Yes, well, I think it's a misconception that, excuse me, we grow a lot of food in Iowa, and we grow a lot of important food in Iowa, but much of the food that we grow does not go directly to the people in Iowa to eat. You know, it's used either for livestock or for other products, and as much of it is, leaves the state. In fact, I think the figure is about 80% of what we grow here is exported out of the state. So we are, you know, we do grow and are increasing to grow more variety in the crops within the state. There's a growing interest amongst current and new farmers to grow a variety and make more organic and more locally mm-hmm. grown foods available. But I do think we think that, well, we should have this food available to all of us everywhere just because we have a lot of very rich soil and grow a lot. But mm-hmm. it's just a part of the whole system is the issue. So.
Linda, and I understand that you meet with growers and distributors. You connect with them and see how this can work. What are those conversations like when you meet with growers and distributors? Do you see solutions there or concerns that you're trying to answer?
Well, yes, there are. I mean, the organizations that I've worked with, that where I encounter the growers and other people within the food system, are organizations such as like the Iowa Food Cooperative, which is a based in Des Moines, but offers locally grown food to whoever wants to purchase it. It's an online system. It's through a web-based system. But the things that we encounter are there's a much greater demand for the fresh produce, especially, than there is a supply right now. So we're wanting to support more people getting into growing their own food, whether it's such as their own garden or gardening, as Ryan mentioned, in Waterloo, mm-hmm. or whether it's farmers who grow more traditional crops in Iowa, like corn or soybeans, and want to add some variety to what they grow. It's at all levels. And it will take many of us growing more of this diverse supply of fresh fruits and vegetables to get more to more people here in Iowa. But definitely there's more of a, so that's one of the issues. There's more of a demand than there is a supply right now. There's gaps within the food system where we may not have the whole steps as far as growing food and then processing some of the food that's grown here so that we can have it more year-round and that we can actually preserve it, whether it's freezing or canning and making it available more throughout the year.
Mm-hmm.
The growing seasons are being extended more by the use of greenhouses and hoop houses in many farms now in Iowa. So there aren't too many months of the year now where we can't get fresh greens or some of those more cool crops are more readily available. So,
mm-hmm. we're reaching out this hour to find people who live in so-called food deserts, troubling in your area finding nearby or accessible places to buy healthy food. Randy joining us from Iowa County. He dialed 1-866-780-9100. Randy, we're coming up on a break, but what's your story there?
Oh, last year I heard something on Market to Market, and they were talking about small towns out in Nebraska and possibly other states in that area that we're going to lose the grocery store. The people in the area banded together and kept the grocery store going.
Hmm. Banded together. In what way banded together? Do you know that?
I don't know what the specific town it was, but it just... You know, one hand washes the other. When I used to do small-town farmers markets, people would say, well, I'm going to go buy it in the grocery store. Well, you're putting the money in my pocket instead of, I won't name any names.
Okay.
And it just, you know, anytime you spend a dollar in your own community, you can generate $8 to $11.
Randy, thank you for your call. We're coming up on a break. I'm sorry to cut you off, but thank you for your story from Iowa County. Perhaps we can take up what communities can do if you find yourself in neighborhoods, several neighborhoods in the same situation where, like Ryan from Waterloo, you'd like to have a more accessible grocery store. We'll ask our guests when we come back. Helen Johnson with us of Iowa State University. We also have Linda Gobberdeal, former president of the Iowa Food Systems Council, also president of Food and You, LLC, and Doris Montgomery, a community health consultant for the Iowa Department of Public Health. When we come back, we want to hear more of your stories of living in a food desert there all around the state in Iowa. 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org, our email. We're also on Facebook, or tweet us at IPR Talk. Back with more discussion about food deserts. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This is River to River on Iowa Public Radio. Great to have you with us. Tomorrow on this program, my guest, filmmaker and Des Moines native Chip Duncan. He has a new public television documentary series on the Reagan presidency coming out to premiere here in Iowa next Monday, as a matter of fact, and discuss tomorrow with him that documentary, the successes and failures of President Reagan's 8 years in office. Also tomorrow on this program, well, Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas spoke in court for the first time in almost 7 years this week. I'll talk with two University of Iowa Law School professors about that, other potential surprises that could happen on the nation's highest court in this year, 2013. Hope you'll join us tomorrow. Today, most suitably, during the noon hour, we're talking about food deserts. What are food deserts? Well, they are large geographic areas where mainstream grocery stores are scarce or even missing, found predominantly in low-income areas, though not everyone living in a food desert is poor. They can be in urban areas or suburban or rural settings. The USDA estimates that 13.5 million Americans live in these food deserts, and we've been hearing a number of Iowans calling 1-866-780-9100 to talk about their experience. Perhaps you have to drive miles to buy fresh produce, that your access to healthy food is a problem. We want to hear your story. What would help it? That's what we want to get into, more of the remedies, the solutions, this half hour with our guests. In the studio in Des Moines, we have two in Des Moines. Doris Montgomery, community health consultant for the Iowa Department of Public Health, registered dietitian, board member of the Food Bank of Iowa. Helen Jensen in Ames, professor of economics at Iowa State University. And Linda Gobberdeel, president of Food and You, LLC, former president of the Iowa Food Systems Council. And the Des Moines Register did an article not too long ago about this, a few days ago. Josh Hafner of the Des Moines Register writing an article titled Access to Groceries Limited for Poor Residents in Des Moines' 14 Food Deserts. Here's one of the narratives. One of the people in Des Moines picked up by that article: living in a food desert is not always low income. We mentioned that. Some have disabilities, like the neighbor of Joanne Muldoon, president of the King Irving Neighborhood Association, in this article, describing the situation her neighbors face to buy groceries. She said in this article, "My neighbor is diabetic and basically blind. She gets to the grocery store through paratransit or the taxi, and my neighbors across the street don't have a car. I don't know how they get to the grocery store." So when we talk about solving this problem, Linda Gobberdeel, transportation is a big thing to look at.
That's correct. That is one of the pieces of the whole approach. And it's not just about the food and having the food there, but people have to be able to access it. So the approach to solving, you know, food deserts, amongst other things around our food system, has to be a very collective approach. And there has to be representation across many organizations and corporations and involved individuals that come across, that put together an overall plan that we work towards and that we measure outcomes so that we're all moving towards improving the situation. Because the food deserts are just, you know, one of the components that has resulted from a number of factors, as we've discussed. So. Mm-hmm.
And in the first half hour, you mentioned, we talked about perhaps smaller grocery outlets in these areas, or working with growers in rural areas to distribute more locally. Our last caller from Story County there before we had to go to the break talked about a community that he'd heard of that had banded together to do that. Linda, is that how does a community go about doing that if they face this situation?
Well, there's a number of ways you could band together. I suppose you, first of all, could find out, like the gentleman from Waterloo who was interested in maybe getting another Hy-Vee located closer to where they live.
Right.
I mean, you could go as a couple people, investigate with Hy-Vee, what would it take for us to locate another store in our area, and then start a grassroots effort possibly in that area to let people know what it would take and try to get, you know, people around the idea of having another location close to them. There's, you know, cooperatives. People put together cooperative organizations that start grassroots level and put together actual businesses that people, you know, own a portion of it, and so they can have what they want within their neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So there's different approaches that you can use.
Helen Jensen, as a professor of economics, looking at this situation, this banding together of a neighborhood, do you see that working in terms of supply and demand? Does someone who could potentially run a grocery store pop up when they see the starting of a grassroots movement, for instance?
This is a real challenge. We're talking about the market. And from the store's perspective, they locate where they can be profitable. It doesn't mean that there aren't barriers that might be reduced or removed in terms of location, maybe zoning, finding appropriate places for location, but they're really concerned about the bottom line. Mm-hmm. So when we look at banding together, is that a commitment to be sure to shop there and not other places, where maybe it's an information campaign that to make the local community see the costs of going outside in terms of gasoline or other transport costs that they may not fully understand. Anything that has an implication for keeping the client base for the stores to make them understand that this, by remaining in the area, that they can make a go of it, and that there will be loyal customers there, all helps to stabilize that economic environment for them.
Identified 14 food deserts in the Des Moines area, 13 to 14 in the Des Moines census tracts called food deserts by the Agriculture Department. They exist side by side in the city's core. Another one near the Des Moines airport. Cheryl is joining us from Des Moines. Are you within one of these food deserts, Cheryl?
I am. Luckily, I'm only half a mile from the nearest grocery store, but I have been dependent on bus transportation. And what I would like to, because I've really enjoyed the increase in farmers markets and community gardens that have helped put fresh vegetables and fruits in people's table. But I'd like to suggest that perhaps, because going by bus is not a very fun thing to do when you have to go and carry a lot of groceries. I've been there, and it's longer. It takes longer. I have to walk 4 blocks to a bus line. Long in the winter time when it's a blizzard, and then wait until the bus comes, go up. I can carry only a limited amount and then have to carry a heavy amount home or take a taxi if I can afford it. But I would like to propose that, because there have been they've decreased the bus service to the core of downtown Des Moines for people. They've cut back because it's a metro area now. Mm-hmm. And it would be nice if there were something like food caravans or something where they have, if you're blind or some have some handicap, you can call the Metro bus. But it would be nice if just they had food caravans to, like, grocery stores or shopping caravans to markets where you can, on a weekly basis or on a daily basis, so you could call up and catch a ride.
That sounds. But I also thought you were going to the other area, Cheryl, where perhaps there could be. I don't know. We have bookmobiles, or we did. Could you have food mobiles? Your thoughts, Doris Montgomery.
There are great examples of that. Actually, of course, some of the places that it happens first are New York City, and in California, you'll see great examples of school buses that have been transformed into fruit and vegetable mobile units, going into areas, or whether it's, you know, creating those community gardens that then serve as a vendor, you know, a local vendor. So there are great examples. And I also want to give a shout out as an example of what has been done in Iowa. If you look up in Northeast Iowa, the Iowa Food and Fitness Initiative up there, that was one of, I believe, 9 that Kellogg Foundation supported to really look at this in a comprehensive way. Extension, public health, lots of farmers, you know, kind of came together and said, what are our assets and what more do we need to kind of create healthier food environments and healthier physical activity environments? And they often can go together, actually.
Mm-hmm.
We also, in the Department of Health, have some new initiatives. One is called the Community Transformation Grants, and there are 26 counties that have been funded to look at 4 key areas, and one of those is the active living and healthy eating. So they are all working on this issue, and you can go on the Department of Health's website and just under C, and they have an index there, and you could, you know, or just Google Community Transformation Grants in Iowa. They have contacts for the counties that have been funded to do this. So any of these individuals who've been calling in and have an interest, we'd love to hear from you and how you'd like to be a part of the solution.
Okay, give that contact information again, please.
Well, you could call our Bureau of Nutrition and Health Promotion, which I have the local number off the top of my head.
How about a website? Is there a good place?
Yes, or just the Iowa Department of Health's website. Okay. And if you, under the index, you have an index of A to Z. If you just go to C for Community Transformation Grants. They have their own webpage.
Okay, very good. Doris Montgomery, yep. Thank you very much. You mentioned Northeast Iowa. We're in touch now, I believe, by phone with Barb Prather, who is Executive Director of the Northeast Iowa Food Bank. Barb, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Well, you've been listening to this conversation. I have my USDA food desert map up. I'm looking at Northeast Iowa. I see Cedar Falls. Waterloo has some food deserts off to the northwest of Cedar Falls, Waterloo. What are you seeing there in terms of this problem? You cover a 16-county area, I believe.
Yes, we cover a 16-county area, and, you know, we look at how we can serve that whole area by providing food, whether it's through a pantry, community meal program, or whatever. And I believe at one point the studies showed that 13 of our 16 counties were food deserts. But really, it wasn't because of the food deserts that we started this program. It was more because of the need. And we found that people in some communities that didn't have a food pantry were going out to other food pantries, and sometimes they were 10, 15, 20 miles away, even further. And so about 3 years ago, we started what was called a mobile food pantry program in four communities in Northeast Iowa just to expand our reach, but also provide a place for people in those communities to access emergency food on the weekend.
Exactly what we were talking about. So give me a picture of this mobile food pantry. What do I see when it rolls up to my street?
Well, really what it is we collaborate with the community, and we, whether it's a church or a community group, and in some cases recently pantries who have lost space. And really what we do is we bring a truckload, and by truck it's a 14-foot truck that has anywhere from 4 to 6 pallets on. It depends on how many people that site is serving. We drop the food off, and then the community volunteers take it over and distribute the food out to people in need. There is a self-declaration of income form that they do need to sign off on. But really, it's a one-stop shop on a Saturday. In some communities, it's during the week. And it just really is a way for us to move perishable fresh food, but as well as food, and provide a food pantry program in that community.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, Doris Montgomery, if you can talk to existing programs like food stamps. Food stamps, because we're talking in some cases about low-income areas. Do food stamps, how do they fit into this picture of food deserts? Because I know food stamps throw a fairly wide net. You can call a candy bar food or not.
Right. They're so critical. Thank you for asking that question. You know, there's a whole group of federal nutrition programs, and the Cornerstone program that reaches over 400,000 Iowans is what we often known as food stamps. It's also referred to as SNAP or food assistance in Iowa. And there is, in addition to an economic benefit to communities when people who are eligible for the program are participating, but also there is a nutritional benefit. Right now, there's certainly some critical conversations going on about how could we strengthen this program to have an even greater nutritional impact.
Mm-hmm.
You know, WIC, everybody loves the Women and Infants Children Program, and that has a much more defined food package, so to speak. There are only certain foods that can be given through that program. Also, in, you know, school meals, whether you look at the older adult congregate meal programs and the home-delivered meals, and Barb just mentioned the food banks and the food pantries, the efforts that are making to get fresh fruits and vegetables. And I'll speak to the Iowa Food Bank, the wonderful collaboration we've had with one of the prisons in Newton that grew fruits and vegetables for us this year. So there's lots and lots of efforts, but having strong federal nutrition programs is really key, because those food stamp benefits, if we have systems in place where they can be used in farmers markets, that strengthens local economies and helps farmers. I think one of the areas that we are really kind of struggling with in Iowa is the fact that we have this changing demographic to older adults.
Right.
And right now that group is not participating as well as they should in SNAP or food assistance.
This is Barb. Can I just add to that?
Sure,
a
Barb.
Little bit?
Pray there.
Yep. We have a state association of food banks in Iowa, and a couple of years ago we started contracting with the Department of Human Services to do food SNAP outreach, and we have two people that go out actually to food pantries and even to our mobile sites to sign people up for SNAP as well as they're going to senior centers and places like that to make the reach broader for people to get easier access to SNAP.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to another caller, 1-866-780-9100, Kevin in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Kevin. What's on your mind? Do you live in a food desert?
Just a couple issues while I was listening. When you're talking about these food deserts and trying to get grocery stores to locate there, grocery stores are going to locate there when they can make money there.
Right.
And from the people that I've done business with in the past, they don't go there because they're lucky. They're a 3.5% margin business, and when they lose a percentage of it, a third of it, easily a quarter of it, sometimes up to a third, right, to shoplifting, they go broke.
Kevin, so there does nevertheless seem to be a demand in many of these food deserts. So do you see a solution?
I'd say do it like when I was young and my wife and I didn't have any money, we put in a big garden and we froze and we had all kinds of food all winter long. And if I had to walk 2 miles to a grocery store, I never did, but if I did, that's what I would do. That's all part of, I keep hearing these stories about access to healthy lifestyles and access to exercise and access to food. Walk to the store and get it. And for those who physically aren't able to do it, then make a friend with a neighbor, buy them a meal or fix them a meal, and in turn they take you to the store. You know, I guess I get a little tired of the hand holding. And believe me, I'm a left winger. I've never voted for a Republican in my life.
Okay.
I'm a left winger, but I'm tired of this hand holding and this group think that we have to handhold everybody for everything they do. Hang up and listen.
Kevin, thank you so much for your perspective calling from Cedar Rapids. Who wants to react to Kevin there? Very strong, passionate feelings about this. Does he have a point?
Well, this is Linda, and I would like to respond that I fully support what he's saying as far as growing, you know, and gardening. And I think gardening is a way to take responsibility for part of your food if you can, you know, if you have access to land and you have the interest and ability to do it. It also involves physical activity, so it not only grows healthy food, but it gives you some exercise as well.
Right.
And I do see that as one of the things that as a community we can certainly get behind. And I have to say that the Des Moines Parks and Recreation have been very supportive of developing more and more community gardens in the city, and it's a huge growing interest. So that's my response to him. I know that, you know, I don't think it's better in my mind to have people take more responsibility than just to be given. But there are times in our life where sometimes we do need some support.
Right.
And so we need those safety
nets. And also, when I hear that too, I also think about, well, what if you are a young person, a child growing up in a food desert and have never really grown up in a family or a neighborhood that has access to healthy food? Education, doesn't that go hand in hand? Because simply because you present fresh vegetables within reach in a neighborhood doesn't mean people are going to eat healthy, does it, Doris?
You are so right. That's a great segue into some of our efforts. One could look at them as sort of hand-holding, but we also see a lot of these initiatives as empowerment. And so we currently are funded through the Department of Health, and Iowa State Extension is funded to do this kind of work as well. We use community partners, and we go into low-income schools where we engage kids in very positive gardening experiences, but as well tasting fruits and vegetables, and doing it in a very fun and using peer pressure, kind of creating a social norm and excitement around healthy food and physical activity. In Des Moines schools, for example, right now there's a really wonderful kind of coming together where we have health corps volunteers, we have food corps volunteers working in our schools doing lots of wonderful gardening. They had a big, huge this fall sweet potato event where their kids were eating sweet potatoes at schools and actually eating the ones that they grew. You've got nutrition education in the classroom that we're funding. And it's really making a difference. We also have opportunities to kind of link what we're doing to the family unit as well. And so, as I said earlier, that all hands on deck, we need to really create these kind of competent eaters, people who know how to grow food and feel good about food and have positive experiences really early in life. And so we're in about, I think we're over 20,000 kids across, you know, 100 schools that we're in this year. So we're very excited about our work.
Thank you, Doris Montgomery, Community Health Consultant for the Iowa Department of Public Health. We have to go, so I want to thank Helen Jensen, Professor of Economics at Iowa State University, Linda Gabardiel, President of Food and ULLC, and Barb Prather, Executive Director of the Northeast Iowa Food Bank. Thank you for the enlightening conversation about food deserts, all of you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
A pleasure.
River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury and Sarah Bowden. Production assistance today from Caitlin Fry. And Ames, help from Garrett Van Leeuwen. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Catherine Perkins. Tomorrow on this program, filmmaker and Des Moines native Chip Duncan will be with us. He has a new public television documentary series on the Reagan presidency. So get ready with your questions about those 8 years of the Reagan presidency. Join our conversation tomorrow here on River to River over the noon hour. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.